Hello, I'm Lyndall Scobel from Cape York Natural Resource Management. For the past couple of years, we've been making the My Cape York Life podcast, sharing the stories of people who live on and care for Cape York Peninsula. Series 2 of My Cape York Life is now complete, but we're proud to offer a couple of bonus episodes that tell another really important Cape York story. It's the story of how Cape York NRM came to be, told by the man who was its founding CEO, Bob Fraser. Bob retired in April 2018, after 8 years in the role. He helped establish Cape York NRM as the region's first natural resource management body and helped it grow from its early days, where there were meetings on Bob's veranda, to the highly regarded regional natural resource body that it is today. Bob has developed a wealth of wisdom and expertise in his lifetime of community service, and he's known all over Cape York and Australia as an effective advocate for the region, a respected leader, and just a thoroughly lovely bloke. I sat down for a yarn with Bob a few days before he retired. We're talking at his lovely home overlooking Lake Tinaroo on the Atherton Tablelands. It's an incredible place, on the side of a steep hill with eastern views to the lake and to the mountains. Bob and his wife Fennell have spent countless hours in the garden, planting native trees and fighting the scrub turkeys to keep the shrubs and gingers in the ground.
Planned them all. I'd go to work in the morning and after putting them all back in the ground, stick them back in the ground. I'd come home in the afternoon, walk down there, and they're all pulled out again.
Ah,
and they were digging.
Turkeys.
Yeah, turkeys, scrub turkeys. Counted 32 here one day, round the house.
Bob moved here in 2010 when he was appointed Cape York NRM's first CEO. And this house that we're in is a big part of the Cape York NRM story.
It's interesting, Lyndall, that you've asked to have this interview here at Tinaroo Park, because this is where Cape York NRM started. Home here was the registered office and the office of Cape York NRM for the first 12 months. And it's around the grounds here at the place where, and on the veranda where we've just been, where a lot of the strategic planning and the thought happened, that in the creation of Cape York NRM. I definitely wrote the constitution for the organisation up there on the veranda.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yes, with a lot of help from the board of directors at the time.
So we chose the venue well. That's
you
good.
Chose it well.
Bob, can I get you to tell us a little bit about who you are? Who's Bob Fraser? Where you come from? Where did you grow up? And what brought you to Queensland, maybe?
Okay. Well, I was born at a very young age. In New South Wales. My people are central New South Wales, originally the last few generations around Cobar, and moved with my parents up to Maribor in Queensland when I was 14 years old. Okay. And to take it from there, so I did have blue blood, but since then I've had a transfusion and it's now very maroon.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah. So I finished my high school in Maribor, Maribor Boys High School, and I took on a job with actually Export Meatworks as a cadet accountant.
Oh, wow.
And 2 years into that, I looked around and was all these, well, they probably weren't old really, but they looked old to me. Here's me, an 18-year-old, 19-year-old. Looked around and I thought, well, I don't want to sit at a desk the rest of my life. And that was where that career was leading me. So I joined the police service.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
and
how old were you?
19.
19.
Nearly 20 when I actually commenced training.
So, Bob, 19, nearly 20, where did you do your training? Would that have been down in Brisbane or somewhere down there?
Brisbane and the old depot, which next door Victoria Barracks up on Petrie Terrace.
Yeah.
And a lot of memories there as well.
Yeah.
But I survived that. Did my first 12 months training in Brisbane.
Yep.
And then had a choice of Cloncurry or Townsville. Vanelle and I had been married in that time and she was pregnant with our first child, so we chose Townsville.
So, Vanelle, you've just introduced this wonderful lady.
Yeah.
So you met her while you're in Brisbane still?
No, I actually met her in Maribor and she moved to Brisbane nursing.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
And the relationship kept going. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. So how old were you when you two met?
I was probably about 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many years?
Started nursing.
Have you been together? How many years?
Really want to know?
Yeah.
Well, we've known each other for 51.
That's incredible. That's amazing. And beautiful marriage still.
Yep.
Beautiful together. That's lovely.
Yep. And three lovely kids and grandkids.
Okay. So we've just come from Brisbane, and you've taken your placement or your first posting.
Yep. I worked in West End, Camp Hill and Morningside in Brisbane for my first 12 months of training. Yeah, moved up to Townsville, and then fairly soon after that went out to Stuart. Vietnam was on national service, and I was kind of based at Stuart working at Laverack Barracks in Townsville.
So how long were you a police officer for?
20 years and one day.
20 years and one day, exactly. And 34 seconds.
Yeah, no, it wasn't quite like that. But yeah, 20, I had an absolutely fabulous career, presented me heaps of opportunities. But I guess thinking about the connection with Cape York, for the last 6 years, I was Aboriginal Island Liaison Officer for North Queensland.
Okay.
And worked with a counterpart in Cairns, Trevor Adcock, who many people on Cape York would know, and Torres Strait.
Yep.
Yeah, so we were working in the same role across the north and far north Queensland.
And that was a time when the liaison officer roles, were they pretty new at that stage?
They didn't exist when we started. I actually introduced the police liaison as a pilot in Townsville.
Okay.
But my connection was the Cape. Trevor and I worked with the Institute of Criminology and developed a community police training course.
Can you tell us what the Institute of Criminology is?
It's an institute that looks at social trends in criminology, at development. It actually looks at potential solutions to crime and antisocial behaviour. They do analysis of things like the crime situation, the social situation on Palm Island and other communities. Very broad ranging, a really great organisation.
Somewhere in there you've ended up doing work on the Cape. Can you tell us a little bit about how that came about and how you and Trevor, you know, how you grew that whole program and what happened?
Okay, well, so Trevor originally was the officer in charge of Palm Island, and I used to go over there relieving when he was away. I was actually doing my first tertiary studies as a police officer through Griffith University. Yeah, so I kind of got seconded into the role and loved it and took it on. So when we developed the community police training program, we needed to deliver it across all the deed of grant and trust communities they were then in Queensland. So there were so many Torres Strait Islands and Cape communities. I was only doing Palm Island, Doomadgee and Mornington. And so I kind of got seconded across and helped Trevor, and I delivered on Hope Vale, Woodgill, Napperham it is now, it was Weeper South, and Lockhart. Yeah. And that's where I first met David Claudie.
Ah, first met David Claudie, and when I started with Cape York NRM almost 6 years ago, David was on our, I think it was just coming onto our board at that stage.
He was. He was actually also one of the steering committee members that set the organisation up. We can probably talk about that later, but David was a community police officer in Lockhart River.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did you work together then?
Yes. I'd run the theory courses in the morning, then we'd have the afternoon off and then work on patrol with the community police on the communities of a night.
That's one of the really interesting things, I guess, about any smaller place or community, but certainly on Cape York, all of those connections that you and the people that you meet, you tend to find them somewhere else down the track, don't you?
Yeah, it was very interesting. I was in meeting Terry Piper at Balkanoo one day, and some of his board come in and they all recognised me from Hope Vale.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, from when I was there. Yeah, they were, one of those was also the sergeant of community police there.
Okay, right. So how long did you do that role for?
6 years altogether.
And where were you based during that time?
Out of Townsville, but if you talk to Vanelle, she hardly saw me.
Yeah,
it was a pretty big task. As it was, I was spending 2 or 3 weeks at a time on Doomadgee, Mornington and Palm Island. And then to do the other communities on the Cape, I was away most of the time. So, yeah.
You must have seen had some amazing experiences during that time with people on country and just in community. Like you've probably seen some awful things in your whole policing career, but I'm sure that you've seen some amazing things as well. So are there any things that spring to mind, any stories that you want to tell from that time?
How long have we got?
As long as you need.
There are some great stories, some sad ones, some really great ones. I think some of the privileges that I enjoyed in that role was going out on country with not just elders but young people as well. Like Palm Island, I was doing the same. We were doing the theory, sitting around under a tree or in a room or whatever, talking about police duties and how to resolve issues. Afternoons off, so we'd go out fishing and diving and things like that. Up at Lockhart, ladies took me out on country and they were collecting, I guess it's flax and other things for making baskets and showed me those. I was presented with a lovely set of fire sticks when I left. I did the last course up there, things like that. Yeah, out of Doomadgee, there was a couple of actually teachers from Mount Isa come up and actually took skulls out of a burial ground up at the top end of Lawn Hill Gorge up on country there. There's things like that. Silly things that shouldn't have happened, but other things. Yeah, so no, I had some great experiences. Sometimes you find yourself in the middle of a brawl or something and happening around you in the community, but no. Overall, great experience, and I guess part of that made me who I am.
And part of that probably drew you back to Cape York.
Yeah, so there wasn't just the opportunity for employment. It was certainly the people in Cape York. I met some absolutely fabulous people in all those communities where I lived. Yeah. It also gave me a feel that there's no single issue and no silver bullet to deal with the issues there, and also really made me feel there should be a different model of delivery of NRM on country, a well-being model that acknowledges the cultural values of the country and the social and economic outcomes that can be there for people as well, getting back on country, the health and well-being issues.
Bob, somewhere in there you spent quite a bit of time at Greenvale as well as a police officer, is that right? Can you tell us about like the role that you had there and how long you were there for?
I went there for a couple of years and there for seven, so it's a little bit of a pattern sometimes. When I like something, I keep at it as long as possible. Yeah, went there as quite a young police officer. I would have had about 7 years of service, I think. Left there as a sergeant, but went there as a constable first class. Yeah, it was a mining town, 120-odd single fellas in barracks, plus about 80 families, plus many thousand square kilometres of country, grazing properties predominantly. No other towns. It was kind of halfway between Charles Towers and Mount Garnet. Yeah, great little community. When we went there, my son was five, a daughter three, and Felicity, our youngest, was 6 months old. Left there because Brentley had to go to high school. That was it, 7 years later.
And that's a really familiar story for country families who, when it's high school time, because it's so difficult to educate kids remotely, you often move to a bigger place.
Yes, that's true. And plus I had the opportunity for promotion. But in that time, it was really interesting. The town was only settled down and it was only a brand new community. The construction of the mine had not long finished. Yeah, so it was quite interesting. And plus you had a lot of drifters come in, your single fellas who avoiding problems and other issues in their life and coming there to work. And some of them were hard workers, hard drinkers, hard fighters. But it was great. But it was good and the bad. I organised and set up a youth club there, and we used to every middle of winter we used to go down one of the properties the mine had grazed a track in to a really good campsite, and anything up to 30-40 kids and their parents would come down. Youth club.
And I don't know how long ago this developed for you, whether it was that time or maybe beforehand, but you certainly told me about lots of good camping spots around that, and I know that that's something you love to do, is get out bush you know, roll out your swag and enjoy the environment.
I was brought up like that, whether it's in West New South Wales or holidays, or then we came to Queensland and I got old enough to have some independence and had a boat on the Mary River, had access to trips over to Fraser Island on the Lady Fraser, and also then had our own boat, mates and I, crabbed and fished and camped and Yeah, on whether it was on the beach at Fraser Island or one of the round run of the creeks up the Mary River. Yeah, and I've always enjoyed that, and every opportunity. I guess I fell in love with the tableland up here because Vanelle and I, the kids, used to come up camping and just kind of really enjoyed it. We'd take a break from Greenvale to come up and come up to the tableland. We'd shop up here, and yeah. So it was always in my mind to retire up here.
Yeah, and here you are just about to do that. So we're going to transition to that story momentarily, but where's the best place to go camping? Of all those places you've been, where's your favourite, if you want to tell us?
On either Greenvale or Lucky Down Station on the Burdekin, Upper Burdekin. There's some absolutely beautiful spots. You know, great fishing, great camping, absolutely beautiful.
Awesome. So we'll take a note of that. And, okay, Bob, so from there, I think you went back to Townsville.
Yep.
Is that when you were doing the Cape
yes.
role?
Yes, yeah.
And
I went back in 84 and finished up in 1990. I went back as district training officer, and I actually looked after the trainees, up to about 30 trainees, worked with them of an evening, that sort of thing, did lectures and training post their graduation from the academy, because they'd set the academy up by then. It was quite a different arrangement. You did a formal 12 months training, whereas before it was a probationary period.
Bob Fraser, the founding CEO of Cape York Natural Resource Management, speaking a few days before he retired in April 2018. You're listening to the first of two bonus episodes of My Cape York Life, sharing the story of our founding CEO, Bob Fraser. Bob had been serving as a police officer in North Queensland for 20-odd years, but his study and life experiences had shown him there were other things he needed to do. A career change was inevitable for Bob, and when it came, it was a big one.
What did you do?
Well, what triggered it was that I put in for a Churchill Fellowship, and I actually got a Churchill Fellowship. So to take a step back, that work on the communities, there was a real challenge. So the Muirhead Inquiry was on about deaths in custody. It had been completed. The community policing system was having a real struggle between Western law and cultural appropriate law, LORE. And so it was really evident that that wasn't working on the communities. And a lot of the challenges that were on the communities were to do with that clash between the culture, the different cultures, Western culture and law. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at some of the model justice systems in Alberta in Canada and also Navajo Nation, mm-hmm. put in for a Churchill Fellowship and got it and went over there for a while and worked on in... Saddle Lake in Plain Cree community in northern Alberta in the Lakes Country, and then down to Window Rock, based around Window Rock to the Navajo Nation in the Four Corners Country.
That must have been an incredible experience. And you took your family with you as well?
Well, the oldest two missed out, and they still kind of look at me sideways about that, but Felicity was only 14, youngest daughter. Yeah. And so I did, yeah. I funded their travel with me and went over with me, and they also had a fabulous experience. But, yeah. But the outshot of that was that, you know, there are the same challenges in amongst the First Nations in US and Canada as we have over here. I think they're well ahead of us in adoption of alternate justice systems, especially in the Navajo Nation, because they're a sovereign nation. In Alberta, it's very similar to what we have here in Queensland, in that we've got three levels of government. It's virtually a similar type of system with their communities over there. So they do have challenges around management of behaviour and serious issues on their communities. Whereas the Navajo Nation, they are able to apply more modified cultural law to their communities.
How did that experience lead you to changing careers?
Good question. I just realised that of course, I mentioned before I was doing tertiary studies in sociology as well. And it got to the stage I just thought, well, there's something else I need to be going and doing to work in that community wellbeing area. That was also at the end of the inquiry into the Queensland Police Service and the government at the time. And so there was an offer there where you could actually leave the police service with service and whatever. So I took that option. In the short term, I'd actually worked with Wormald Security for the 4th Pacific Festival of the Arts with police training background. Yeah. They recruited a couple of hundred Indigenous security officers for that event held in Townsville. Mm-hmm. And so I actually worked with them to train those security officers in a whole range of actually duties and, you know, responsibilities and what options they had for managing behaviour and things like that. Yeah, so when Wormald heard that I left the police service, they offered me a franchise in the Whitsundays to run Wormald Security, and went and did that for a little while, a bit over 12 months, but really it wasn't my thing. And I came back to Townsville, and another police officer and one ex-Navy, one ex-Army people, high-level technical people, they'd got out as well, and we formed a company and bought monitoring station, alarm monitoring installation, and two security companies in Townsville. Mm-hmm. So Vanelle and I were partners in that for a couple of years. And that really wasn't me. It was great. It was a great experience. But I heard about the opportunity to go across to Endeavour Foundation as end up with North Queensland Regional Manager for 5 years, running from basically Proserpine to Torres Strait to Mount Isa.
Yeah, right. So that would have been a pretty big and challenging job for you as well.
From memory, it was about a 13, 14 million budget and a couple of hundred employees and many hundreds of people with disability, farms, workshops, supported accommodation, day services, a whole range of services. That was a great experience as well.
I'll bet it was. And, you know, I personally know how rewarding that work can actually be.
It was really the opportunity for innovation in that organisation was just unlimited. Yeah. It originated as a Subnormal Children's Welfare Association and hadn't really moved beyond that type of approach to they used to run schools until Queensland Education took them over. Accommodation housing, large accommodation housing, and society had moved beyond that. So the opportunity to get these young people back out into the community, into work and living independently and things like that. So,
The Endeavour Foundation have certainly done some amazing work.
Yeah, brilliant. And always have. All of us, whether it's an NRM organisation or a disability, need to move with the times and the changes in society. People with disability were locked away, especially in small rural communities, you know. But, yeah, they have a real place in society. Make a contribution, give them the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Bob, I think we're just about to arrive at an NRM, a change to get to natural resource management and the work that you've done there. Is that right?
Not quite.
Oh, what's in between?
I was one of five regional managers in for Endeavour Foundation, and two of us got tasked with actually doing a review. So I think the expenditure for Endeavour Foundation in the year I finished was $90 million, and they had about $84 million income. And that was to do with the introduction of Lotto and Casket, all these types of things. So traditionally they'd funded a lot of the work from fundraising, Queen Quests and Tiny Tots and all that type of thing, plus their major art union. And all that income was drying up. So I got the task with actually looking at a redesign of the whole structure of Endeavour Foundation. Mm. And long story short, I wrote myself out of a job. So, I did away with regional
Bugger.
Managers. Yeah, well, it was the right thing to do. Every opportunity had to be taken and to bring the budget back to the level of income.
Yeah, right.
It was really interesting because we were actually living in the Burdekin, even though I was working across the whole of the North Queensland, living in the Burdekin, and the word got out that, you know, what was happening, and a small local community organisation approached me and asked me if I would actually take on the role to kind of review them and re-establish and set them up. And I took that job on and was there for 5 years.
So who were they?
Vertican Community Association.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Yeah, led by a lovely lady, Joan Heatley, uh-huh. who was the driving force and a fabulous support for me for the changes I wanted to bring in.
Yeah.
But took it from a small organisation. I think there were 60-odd staff when I left and a large budget, and had collaborated with the Rural Division of General Practice, set up health services, psychological services, farm health, farm family health services, a transport service to get people up to Townsville to the hospital, and mm-hmm. all that type of stuff.
All that good stuff. Yeah. Fantastic.
As well as all the community welfare and support systems, a large home and community care service. Yeah.
So that was quite a large job as well.
Most enjoyable, it kept me hopping, but it did keep me at home.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was a bit different. I was only working in basically the Burdekin area.
And by that stage, your kids have all grown up?
Yep. All been at uni and moved on. Mm. Yeah.
So how did Vanelle cope having you at home?
She seemed to love it. I don't know. she's a long-suffering person. But yeah, that was really nice. But part of that work I was doing, I think I mentioned before about, I really saw that there's a need to actually break down barriers between services and functions and our thinking about supporting community. Mm. And I was looking at a wellbeing service right back. You know, that's the kind of model that we implemented, looking at holistically at the issues in the area, and went through some ups and downs with the cane industry and other things like that. Yeah, it was quite interesting. What happened was that I started working with Central Queensland University, and they were providing a lot of the support and assistance and running courses for me with farm families and especially the women, the backbone of the cane industry, really. Mm-hmm. I got encouraged by Bob Miles and Jill Windle and a couple of others to, why don't you come back and do a bit more study. And so I went back and did my master's in sustainable regional development.
So what year did you finish that?
2004, and I graduated early 2005.
Okay.
What actually happened, I graduated and it would have been probably around Easter in 2005. And as I said, Vanelle and I used to love coming up camp, and so we came up and a few days camping at Fongon Bay, and brought the boat up. And
so, just to give some context of Fongon Bay, Bob, where is that?
On Lake Tinaroo.
So this is the Atherton Tablelands, the hinterland between Cairns and Townsville.
That's correct. Yeah, lovely country, quite a different climate to down on the coast, and some fabulous camping areas around the lake. Are really well managed by parks, and came up and. I think we were probably there for about 3 days, and those days just had a big esky, and running out of ice. So I hopped in the boat and I zipped across to Tinaroo Village from the bay, and you can see it from where we were camped. And went and got some ice and a couple other bits and things, and just picked up the Australian and came back, and, kind of not much to do. So I read it from one end to the other, and I got to the positions vacant part of it, the Australian. And here they're advertising for the CEO position for NQ Dry Tropical, actually called Burdekin Solutions back then.
Okay. Yep.
And I just finished my master's and kind of looked at it and thought, wow, man, maybe I could do that. I put in for it, and long story short, I got it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So NQ Dry Tropics, which you said was Burdekin Solutions back then?
Yeah, originally Burdekin Solutions, but now NQ Dry Tropics for quite a few years now.
Yep.
Renamed, it's the Burdekin Dry Tropics region.
And can you tell us, because some people listening won't know anything about the kind of work that these organisations and our organisation do, so can you tell us a bit about what you're getting yourself in for?
I didn't know. it become pretty clear. So for the first 12 months, it presented some real challenges to virtually re-establish the organisation. I had some brilliant staff and that there. But anyway, hit a few challenges and under threat to lose funding and their designation as an NRM body, regional body in Queensland. At the end of the first 12 months, the funding was guaranteed ongoing funding was guaranteed. And it's a reef region as well, a Great Barrier Reef region. So there are heaps of opportunities to grow the organisation and to grow support for landholders. Mm. But the primary role of that organisation, it all comes back to water quality, really, at that time anyway, at least. So supporting cultural change in land management across farms, grazing, all those sorts of things. And a lot of community education and approaches, and those were the early days in delivery of reef programs and natural resource management programs. So there was a lot of trial and error in those days. It wasn't a lot of clear indications about how would you go about to improve water quality. So one of the early things we did, we engaged a person to actually develop a water quality improvement plan.
Oh, yeah.
So that was that was quite early on in those days.
Yep.
And that really identified the values that people put on country. And I think that's a fabulous place to start. And one of the things that we did quite differently in the Burdekin was actually look at the cultural values of the land and the water bodies, as well as the actual economic and environmental values.
So why is that important, Bob?
For a whole range of reasons, because what you're trying to do is actually get some people to support practice change or support carrying out activity on country. Mm-hmm. And so if you value something and understand the values of it, you're more likely to look after it. So if something's just purely an economic value to you, you're up in the headwaters of the Burdekin River or one of its tributaries, you might say, well, the only use I have for this water is for watering my cattle, and I don't care, you know, as long as the water is a good enough quality for the cattle to water my cattle, and then that's all I want. But if you look at the other values they place on it, whether it be for recreation or in both non-Indigenous and Indigenous terms, the cultural, for the spiritual values of that. So the person that came on board to do that water quality improvement plan actually had worked in the Galapagos and in other countries throughout the world where that was really an important part of developing water quality programs. So when we sat down and looked at it, and I guess we came to this conclusion, that would be a great way to actually do it. So just give you a bit of an idea. There was one family on a grazing property. When they were originally sat down with, they said, you know, well, the water quality, what do you want from the water and flowing through river through your place? And they said, well, you know, grazing the cattle. But then they started looking at, well, every Easter we go down, we camp at this place on the river, we fish. So we really, really need to look after the fish and that sort of thing. And some of their kids have been actually baptised in the river.
Mm.
Those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So even the non-Indigenous people had spiritual and other values that they put on the water bodies when they actually thought about it and were kind of led through a process.
Yeah.
Bob Fraser, the founding CEO of Cape York Natural Resource Management, in conversations a few days before his retirement in April 2018. And we'll hear more of Bob's story, including his momentous move to Far North Queensland and Cape York NRM, in the second bonus episode of our podcast, My Cape York Life. And you can find that episode and all the previous episodes on our website, landmanager.capeyorknrm.com.au, or search My Cape York Life on your favourite podcast app. I'm Lyndall Scoble, and I'll see you next time on My Cape York Life.
I tell you, my little home is Cape York.